When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome once again, everybody, to Blockbuster Mentality. I'm your host, Ben. Today, me and Dave are joined by Kevin L. Johnson, who was just in the newest season of Stranger Things and Ozark. Be sure to check him out in Florida Man. It's a new series coming out. More details to come. He talks about that a little bit on the show. We talk Serpico from 1973 with Al Pacino, directed by Sidney Lumet. Before we get into the episode, make sure you're subscribed to us on iTunes, rate and review us, give this that 5-star review to help us to continue to grow on those charts. We are on YouTube too. Our numbers are huge on audio, but we're trying to get those YouTube numbers up as well. So hit that subscribe button, notifications. I don't know. What do YouTubers say? I don't know. Just do the thing. But give us that. Follow us on Twitter at BlockbusterCast, Instagram at BlockbusterMentality, and find out what celebrities we're talking to. Go to BlockbusterMentality.com. Talk to a lot of celebrities. You know what I'm saying? That's what we do. But had a great time talking with Kevin. Second time he's been on the show. Second Al Pacino film he's chosen. Second Sidney Lumet film he's chosen. We talked about Dog Day Afternoon last time he was on. One of our first guests once we started to be a guest-driven show. So happy he was able to come back and talk movies with us. So here is our conversation with Kevin L. Johnson. Last time we were talking, learning to play guitar. Did you ever what happened with that?
If I move that guitar, there's probably like a dust guitar outline.
it happens, you know. You get ambitious at first and then
it looks nice though.
It does.
Right?
It does. It's beautiful. We both got ours, you know. So look at this. Look at the trio with our
guitars. Right. We did talk about that. That's right. We did talk about guitars, didn't we?
Yeah.
I didn't pretend like I knew anything about guitars.
No. You were trying to learn, I think, was the conversation. So you still have not learned, so that we know that. So that's good.
Last time we had a big memorabilia reveal. Do you have any surprises for us tonight?
Oh, that's right. I had the Dog Day Afternoon thing, did I show? Was it Dog Day Afternoon or was it a?
It was a playbill for Al Pacino program, a play in the park or something.
Oh yeah, I can't remember. Does any of this look familiar in the background? Do you guys remember any of that?
A little bit.
The artwork might look new. I don't know.
Because my room was pretty. Like an insane asylum, like at one point, and during the pandemic, I said I got to do something. But the guitar was already up, though, right?
Yeah, the guitar was there. Yeah,
the guitar. Okay, was there. So yes.
Okay, so I think everything else was there too. Then,
You don't have to show anything.
No, I don't know if you had any surprises for us or not, but
I got the Al Pacino Dog Day Afternoon, poster, like the movie poster framed, but I feel like if I take that down, it's not going to be easy.
Don't worry about it. Dave will live. He'll live. Don't
You've been busy, Kevin. It feels like you're always on my TV, because my wife and I finished Ozark not too long ago. And just recently we went through, this first part of Stranger Things season 4. Well done by you. That's awesome, man. That's great.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Busy guy, that's for sure. What Is all your, did you film, is Ozark film in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And filmed, so did Stranger Things?
Mm-hmm.
So same everything thing. Films in Atlanta, not Hollywood. That's
pretty, I mean, you know, when I say like, oh, like whatever you've watched on TV, it probably films here. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but yeah, it's almost true.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure.
Is there any hope for Sam? Is he gonna? He went off with that church group. Is he gonna be okay? It seemed like he was just walking into another thing, but at least it wasn't the birds.
Yeah. I think people are like, "Oh, he had a nice little ending," but then when you think about it, did he? I don't know. No. He's gone into a cult. I mean,
yeah.
Or is he just wanting to get laid? Who knows? Like, yeah, maybe he thinks Annalise, you know, looks a lot like Wendy.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. I remember I was listening a little bit to our buddies over at Apple Teenies with Ken and Dan. They you guys brought up that point. The blonde thing, like, is he kind of going to, like, is that like his thing? Like, you know, is that his comfort type of thing? And I mean, you got Ruth who's blonde and all that. So he you know, has that sort of thing going for him, I think. But
yeah, to me, I agree. It came across on the show, which is good, which is that it looked like maybe he was going to be preyed upon. But at least he probably was going to live, right?
Like, yeah.
His life wasn't in danger.
not physically, I guess.
Yeah.
Mentally, exactly. He was probably screwed.
Yeah, a little brainwashed, you know. I mean, you're... how is acting when you're getting baptized? How like, is that like a did I really just get baptized, or do I?
I asked that same question. I was like, does this count? Because I mean, I haven't been baptized. Does this count just in case something is after this?
Right.
You know, just to cover your bases.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you're at the pearly gates, and like, well, I did it for, you know, the show.
So. I said the words. Said the words, and
I think she was ordained. Don't you have to wait? Doesn't she have to be ordained?
Yeah.
I think just being a human makes you ordained at this point. I don't know, but yeah, that's. You last time we spoke too, you alluded to having a project coming up, and was obvious that it was Stranger Things. Now, at that point, when did you find out that you were going to be, and spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen Stranger Things yet, but I haven't even finished the season yet, so spoiler alert for me too, but when was it revealed to you that you were playing a younger version of Robert Englund?
I knew that when they were fitting me for my wardrobe, they told me that.
So you had gotten the part, you had no idea, and then when you were getting fitted and everything, that's when you found out, oh, I'm the younger version of Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, it was interesting because when I got the breakdown, it said they were looking for a young Bill Maher.
So it was,
which is also could be a young Robert Englund. So it was another way of kind of hiding, you know. So I was like, oh, is Bill Maher going to be in Stranger Things? Okay.
Right. Yeah, that would be.
But I guess that was a way to make it even more, you know, hidden what they were going to do, because they're so secretive on that show. Yeah, and they didn't even want the person who's auditioning for the role to know that they're actually auditioning for a young Robert Englund. So they're like, who does Robert Englund look like? And we could say that.
Yeah.
Young Bill Maher. And I was like, do I look like a young Bill Maher?
I don't know. I'll see it. But
I mean, now that when you mention it, I can, I guess, maybe see it a little, but I for some reason, I totally buy the Robert Englund thing. Like,
I thought that was,
were you honored?
Yeah, I didn't get to meet I didn't get to meet him because he was on set as I was like I, as I was getting there one day, we were there at the same time, but we didn't cross paths.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And, he couldn't see anyways, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
I don't know how far you've got.
I've seen pictures. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Way
okay.
to spoil Kevin. God.
Damn it, Kevin.
That's been out go. For a couple weeks now. I think we're fine here.
Yeah, exactly. Because have you finished it yet, Dave?
I have, yeah. This is great. Oh, okay. Yeah. And okay. just, and actually, I think
it was I have perfect... three left or so.
Huh?
I think I have like three or four left. But anyway, you were saying.
But I think seeing you two together, Kevin, it was perfect. You know, it exactly looks. I mean, when you know, like it's Robert Englund, and then like, oh yeah, he's got kind of like a makeup thing going on, and it is perfect. You are the perfect, like, more innocent younger version of himself. You know, if that makes sense. Rather than, and he becomes this like grizzled old, you know, like wounded man, and it was absolutely fantastic. Curious, what's your lead time on? Between the time you get a call to the point where you're fitted and knowing what the hell you're even doing, like, wow, what was how long were you waiting for all that?
Oh man. It kind of depends on the project. I can't remember how long it was, like when I booked it and then got to wardrobe, maybe like a week.
Oh, okay. So not bad. Okay. So they weren't like keeping you, it wasn't like months or anything like that. Okay.
I didn't have the sides, till like I think on the day.
Okay.
But I didn't really have to worry about dialogue, so that's
true. Yeah,
Robert Englund was telling most of the story, so
yeah, your job was done for you, which was nice. But no, that's awesome, man. And continuing on that Netflix streak, what do you have anything else on the horizon before we get into the film we're going to be speaking about?
There's a show called Florida Man. That's coming out sometime this year. I was in a couple episodes. And then I got another project that I can't mention right now. That'll be on AMC.
Okay. So, okay. Yeah.
Another tease
for us. Like it. All right. Cool, man. Well, yeah, definitely. When does Florida Man come out? Did you already say? Sorry. When does that come out?
There's no date yet, but okay. I would think it's got to be soon. Probably sometime in the fall, maybe. That's my guess.
What type of show is it? Other than being, is it a comedy? Because Florida Man, I always think just comedy, like people are making fun of us Floridians, so which is always well deserved. But
it's not a comedy. They're keeping it kind of like hush hush what it's about. Yeah. But in the scripts, they have like in between some of the scenes, they have like newscast.
Gotcha.
So that's where the whole Florida Man thing comes into play. And it also takes place in Florida. So,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Well, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, no, I have one more question about it, though.
Okay, one more. Okay.
Was it filmed in Atlanta?
It was. Yeah. Okay. Wait, no. I'm sorry. No, that was filmed in North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, Wilmington. So. Yeah.
See, not every show is in Atlanta. Come on, man. Definitely looking forward to that. And yeah, I'm so glad you were willing to come back on. You know, we didn't scare you away too much, obviously, which is always good to hear from previous guests. You know, last time we obviously spoke about 1975's Dog Day Afternoon with Al Pacino. Not only did it also star Al Pacino, directed by Sidney Lumet.
Sidney
Lumet. And
you say Cindy?
I think I said that at first.
Different.
Yes.
Cindy is different.
Yeah, that's totally different. thanks, Dave.
No,
but we not only have another Pacino movie, but another Lumet movie.
Yeah, I know, right?
Two years before, we're talking Serpico, 1973. Yeah. So you got a little bit of a Pacino thing going. Would you say you have a Lumet thing as well?
Yeah. Those, I mean, Dog Day Afternoon and Serpico are two of my favorites. So yeah, he passed away a couple years ago, maybe.
It wasn't that long ago. I know that. I remember. Yeah, recently hearing that. But I mean, not only, you know, those two films. I mean, 12 Angry Men. You know, even did I think his last film was Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
Great movie.
With the late great Philip Seymour Hoffman. Great director. Serpico, Al Pacino. I know you're a big Al Pacino guy, but why this film out of all the other Al Pacino films did you pick?
Man, there was just something like when I first saw this movie, it was so cool. Like the wardrobe, the setting, and the fact that he goes from completely clean shaven to this long haired hippie beard, like, because they shot it in reverse order, which is a great idea. You have to, I would think. So.
Yeah, they didn't have to wait for him to like grow the beard and everything. Like, yeah, they actually gradually shaved him because he like had a beard, then a goatee, then a mustache.
Yeah,
obviously in reverse order. In the film, it goes in order of mustache, goatee, beard. But
it's one of his finest films. I mean, I think he's. I mean, Dog Day Afternoon is my favorite, but yeah. Serpico is way up there. And I don't know, there's just some of the scene, there's like some really short scenes that are just, they just pull you in still. Like there's there's a scene where he's feeding his parakeet or his bird, and his girlfriend's in the bed and he's just feeding the bird in the middle of the dark. And I'm just like, that's such a beautiful looking scene. It's just,
yeah,
he's just standing there and the bird's just grabbing the food. And
right. Yeah.
Yeah. This movie has a realism to it that I liked, and it's classic, like early mid 70s realism, right? And it, like right away from the beginning, where we get that shot where our main character has been shot in the face, and when they're going around, like with the cop car into the hospital, the handheld stuff, it doesn't look good. It looks like gritty and dirty. It's not mm-hmm. all of it is beautiful. And then you get like those nice moments. This stuck out to me. Like when anyone says that style of 70s, like this movie, I think fits it to a T.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you have, I was totally, you know, I always get, LA Confidential vibes, which obviously came after this, which I assume was, you know, they drew inspiration, I would think, from this you know, subject matter, at least, you know, with corrupt cops and everything, and that's set in LA where it's like glamour and all this, where this is more of a like grimy, dirty New York, you know, version.
It doesn't look like any place I want to live.
Right. Yeah.
I still wanted to live in his little like place though. I just thought that was like a little cool spot.
The like, neighborhood was good, but like everything outside of it felt, because he went to Greenwich Village, right? He like specifically went there like for a little bit of culture and stuff like that. He wanted to get out of his neighborhood. He's such an odd bird. And actually, this is the first time I've watched this film all the way through. I've seen parts of it and I never quite got it. Mm. I always thought the costumes and stuff was him. Or at least my perception of it was from the parts I saw. I think I saw maybe the back half. I think I always thought he was undercover, but not really. This is just him.
He's
he's just this, he's kind of his own person. He's his own man, and he's never really comfortable in any situation he's in. He always feels like it's like oppressing him in some way, or he's not able to like completely be himself. And it's such a strange thing to choose being a cop. But even that scene is the way he describes why he wanted to be a cop was awesome, I thought.
Oh, the scene where he's talking to his, I think it's his, is it his first girlfriend?
Yeah.
And he's opening the bottle of wine.
Yeah.
That scene.
Oh, great scene.
Yeah.
It's such an easy, simple scene to shoot. Like, it's just, there's no movement. The camera's still.
Yeah.
And those are beautiful scenes. Like, when you don't have to go in for close-ups and stuff like that. I mean, just let it breathe and.
Yeah.
And let Pacino do what Pacino does.
I love that she was giving him a massage. That was nice.
Yeah. I think it was the second.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's in the same scene. It's like a.
Yeah.
But I don't think that does the camera. It doesn't. Yeah. Doesn't cut though, does it? I think it.
I don't think so. Yeah. I think it's all one shot, which is, I always love. It's just, yeah. Just, yeah. Great. And yeah. Cause he says he wants to be a cop because when he was a kid, like there was a crowd and like the cops knew everything. I think.
Yeah.
Was,
like, it's like, I wanted to know, what do they know?
Yeah.
It wasn't even really about being a cop. It was more about like.
Yeah. Talking
solving
the microphone
puzzles here. And. Like having an understanding of how the world around him worked, like, and that he thought was his way of getting that knowledge, which I thought was interesting. It wasn't, had really nothing to do with like enforcing the law, you know, that wasn't like his primary motivation or keeping order or something like that. He just, like, to him it was like intellectual,
and he was so you know, disappointed to find out, you know, like every fucking borough that he went to was corrupt. Like he couldn't find anybody that was clean. And this, yeah, he just, I think it, I think that's why his personal life was so, you know, it didn't work out with the women, because he was so involved in trying to be the perfect cop, the best, like the most honest. And that's why his relationships never work, because he put his job before he put above his personal life.
Well, because you know, he wanted to know what the cops knew. You know, they knew everything, but then he ends up finding out things that he probably didn't want to find out. You know, it's you know, that interesting juxtaposition there. You know, it's definitely, you know, a dilemma. You know, he has to live with knowing this stuff, and it's like, man, this is what I signed up for. And
alive, yeah,
exactly.
So the second, there's two girls in this. I don't think he married either one of them, at least in the movie, right? They were just girlfriends, living girlfriends.
Yeah. In real life, he married them.
He did?
Okay. Yeah.
It was interesting. I think he was getting pressure from the second one to, I think, because she tells the story about the wise king or something like that. And it was sort of like, it was like a poisoned well and everybody drank but the king, and they all said he was crazy. And then finally he drank from the well and they all thought he was sane. I think that was her way of telling him to just go along, right? Partake, go take the money, right?
I was going to ask you guys about that. No, I was going to ask you guys the same thing.
Yeah,
what are your thoughts, Kevin?
He's getting it from all ends.
It probably would have made his life easier had he just taken the money. But
exactly.
But the easiest way isn't always the right way, right? So,
exactly. And that's the main theme of this movie. It's just, you know, it's you know, am I doing this just to get the medals and the status and everything, you know, that get that status symbol? But you know, it's about right and wrong for him. And it's such an interesting character study, you know, with in such a dilemma, you know, he goes through. And then back to the wardrobe. Yeah, I was definitely thinking, you know, I think some of it was undercover because at one point he like comes in as like a rabbi.
Yeah, that was the funniest part of the movie.
Yeah.
I was just like, what is happening? I was getting like,
like, man, his beard got really long. That's awesome.
I was getting Fletch vibes with Chevy Chase. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like just dressing as different characters because he was dressed as a rabbi or you know whatever, and then dressed as like a butcher type person when he catches the one guy.
That was great.
It's just
and you know that's like Pacino running and all that. I mean, I can't see that with stunt people. I think that's all him.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, there's a
and how fast is he? Holy crap! He is he fast?
He's fast. And I was thinking, there's one where he chases a guy down the stairs, and it looked like he twisted his ankle on his way down the stairs. You guys, I don't know if you guys caught that. I was like, oh man.
Yeah. Like,
but you know, like, another guy. Was it the guy he was chasing that twisted his ankle?
No, I thought it was. It looked to me like it was Pacino when he was chasing him down. I think it was the one where he was. He had the. I forget what the one where he almost got shot. I think on his way to that. Just before that, he went down this like two flights of concrete stairs, and it looked like he was like running so fast he like twisted his ankle and then just kept going because you know he's a pro.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Have you guys ever impulse bought a dog for $5?
I would totally buy a dog for $5 if I have my own place.
Yeah,
I thought for sure they were gonna rip him off. Those two looked suspect to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was a choice that they made, but yeah, when he gets the dog and he walks in, you know, he's like, which one of you dogs do I want? And I have to feel that's, you know, Pacino just in the scene and just kind of doing his thing. Like, I doubt that's in the script. Like, which one of you dogs, you know, that doesn't need to be in the scene. That doesn't need to be in the script. That you can have fun with that stuff.
Yeah.
And he picks the dog. And then he walks off and she gives a look to the guy like or something like they're gonna steal his stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But he was so trustworthy. He was like, hey, can you watch my stuff for me? I'm gonna maybe move it in here.
That's a great impression because he's laying something on the accent. He talks a little different in this movie than like in almost anyone. He was like he's doing something there. Yeah. I don't know if that was I don't know what it was. It just But you know, I wonder because they said, does he have like this aura about him? Because earlier where I forget where it was, he was with another cop and something happened. He's like, you're like a jinx. Does he have, is that like what they're trying to say? Like, so when he interacts with people, he's like, he's just like good. He's like, there's a goodness to him that like,
He's got a genuineness to him when he's like around.
But it actually affects like the stuff going on around him. Like, so when he interacts, I think those people are going to rip him off. Maybe they saw his goodness and it stopped them. And then the other one where, I can't remember the scene, but he was with a cop and he called him a jinx. I think so he was going to get money or something like that. And Pacino shows up and then like the thing stops. I'm doing a horrible job of explaining.
No, yeah, I know what you're talking about, but yeah, I'm drawing a blank too. Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
He called him a jinx. It just felt like he like foiled bad stuff. And then like
Pacino called him a jinx.
The cop called Pacino a jinx for showing up. I'm sorry. I should just drop this, but
no, it's all right.
It was his partner. He called him a jinx and I forget what the scenario was and it kind of ruined whatever the guy was doing. And it was a bad thing. I just can't remember.
It was like a collecting money kind of thing.
It might've been. Yeah. But you just kind of got the sense that he had an aura that actually it wasn't just like his own character. It like affected the world around him. That's kind of how I read it.
No, definitely. I mean, the main corruption, it seems to be this, the cops taking money,
which is a shitload.
Yeah.
By the way, it's not like a few bucks here and there. It's like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it was like $120,000 or something, I think.
Back in 1973, right? You know, like, oh my God. That's...
And he's like, I'm just going to keep it in this envelope if you change your mind. One of them was like, and it's just like, I don't know why. I just, when I saw the movie the first time, I never thought he was going to take the money anyways. Like, I knew there's just something about Serpico where he just, it didn't matter. He was never going to take the money.
Yeah.
He never did.
Yeah, like it's definitely one of those movies where it's like, okay, this is like one of those hero movies where you, yeah. you know, Frank Serpico is
it's not in him to do it.
Yeah, exactly. there was no urge or anything to take it, which was
he's not like even on a. I don't even see him as like a crusader by choice. If it was up to him, like, because he doesn't really, he judges the guys for doing it, but I don't think he's really mad at them individually. He's just mad about it as a system.
Yeah. You know, because he brings that up at the end. You know, we got to start at the top. Like, why is this being allowed to happen? You know, right. you know, with the commissioner and everything. Or, yeah, because I think that's what he's saying at the end, you know, in that press conference or whatever you want to call it. You know, he's basically
he's not
saying,
preachy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not like holier than thou. He's just like, I don't need it. I don't want to do it. This is not what I'm here for. And to me, it just doesn't feel right. You know, do it, I guess, if you want. Don't involve me. I don't want any part of it. And then when he realizes that it actually affects, he can't do anything to get it to stop, no matter what. You're going in outside sources? The whole outside sources. But like, even then, it doesn't work. He goes to talks to the mayor. The commissioner apparently, you know, never going to talk to him. And then finally, I love when they bring him in and then into the stable. And I guess I don't know who it was, his captain or whatever. He's like, oh, the higher ups from here are here to talk to you. And he's afterwards like, fuck, man, what are you? You just told everybody that I'm going to talk to these guys. They know what it's about. You're trying to kill me. And then that's what it literally becomes about, his survival, which I like too. Yeah. Not just about him trying to expose something. He's like, he never knows when he's going to get a bullet in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I can't believe that actually happened in real life.
I know. That's the crazy thing about this too is, yeah, this is a true story. You know, it's something that really happened. And I looked it up, and Frank Serpico is still alive today. He is 86 wow. years old. So there you go. He's still alive. So is Pacino, which is great. Can still get greatness out of him. I'm looking at some quotes here. I love this one. The reality is that we do not wash our own laundry. It just gets dirtier.
Yeah.
That's, you know, a great
Chinatown vibe almost.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's China, you know, it's Chinatown, you know. Yeah. What are you gonna do?
didn't you guys love how, because we said how like Serpico and Pacino, really, the way he, it felt so natural to him to be wearing those outlandish outfits. How bad did he look as a rookie cop wearing the uniform? He looked like a 5-year-old, something that didn't fit him. It was so out of place.
I was like, it's Michael from The Godfather.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Like, no, this is wrong. This is all wrong.
Yeah, it's funny because, yeah, Michael, you know, him as the Godfather wearing his military uniform, like he looked like very, you know, pristine mm-hmm. and, you know, well dressed. But yeah, when he's wearing the cop uniform, it's like, what is this little guy doing? What is he up to?
Yeah, it doesn't look like a cop. But I think that's a credit to him. He, like, a great actor will do that. Like, he's gregarious when he's in his full beard, and it's, I don't even know what that hat is. But like when he's in that patrolman uniform, he's like
a
almost
fedora.
Yeah, yeah,
like a big fedora that he had. I think
it's a crazy. Well,
and he kept wearing those like bucket hats type of thing that were like totally like pulled down too. Like,
I thought it was like a Gilligan hat, but with the brim down, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, is that what, I don't know, what's a bucket hat? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know, but like a Gilligan hat, but yeah, with it all like, folded. Definitely.
Kevin, we're all wearing blue. Did you notice this?
We just are in sync. We have guitars behind us. We're wearing blue.
Wow.
I'm missing the lightning game for you, Kevin. You know, it's just, you know, this is how we roll. we were talking about long shots earlier. I just curious as an actor, like, when there's you know, it's going to be a scene where it's a longer shot and there's not going to be a cut or anything, is that I know as viewers we love it, as directors they love it, but like as an actor, is it put more pressure on you, is it more stressful, like how do you feel about that as an actor?
You mean like a wide shot or just a
just
long,
like a continuous shot? Yeah, like a long continuous shot.
Oh, I like those. I mean, that's I mean, there's you got room to breathe and
yeah.
I think some of those are the best shots.
Is it kind of like you can almost like feel each other out, almost like a play? I guess you could say, you know, because it's.
Yeah, you don't have to hit your mark, you know. It's because everybody's in the shot and you can just play. Like the scene, I mean there's a number of them in Serpico, but the scene where he's like walking across the streets early in the movie and the fire hydrants and they're playing in the water.
Yeah,
he like runs across, and it's like a long. It's like a gets to run across, and you know, he doesn't have to worry about hitting a certain mark. It's a nice wide shot, and
I feel like we're making Kevin uncomfortable because we're asking him about his craft, and I know actors don't like to give away what they're feeling in the moment because they feel weird. But
oh no, I'm good with that.
I'm just gonna put my foot on the gas. Do you have? Is there like a role, just an outline of is there a thing that you would love to play? Is there a character, a scenario, a thing where you're like, you know what? I think I can nail that. Do you have like a general, do you think about that or not? I don't know. I'm always curious.
Or are you just looking for a job?
Just hire me.
Yeah. Just hire me. I think I'd be really good at the guy who you think is a good guy, but he ends up being the bad guy.
Yeah.
Like I was told I could probably do that really well. Because I do have like an innocent look.
Yeah. Right. But deep down you're a menace.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. Like, you know, what keeps you going? Like everyone, you know, you have that bug in you have that passion. Like, so is that like, what is, when you're up at night and you're thinking about your career and your passion and you know what you want to, the mark you want to leave. I mean, are those the kinds of things you think about, or is it just more mundane? I'm just curious.
No, I mean the beauty in the acting business is like there's no ceiling. You know, you're always, you know, reaching for that next level.
Yeah,
and learning something new every time you're on set and just like, you know, humans evolve. Like the more we evolve, it'll show on camera, kind of deal. Does that make sense?
Like, it does. Is Pacino your biggest influence, or do you have others?
It's Pacino and Hoffman probably still.
Yeah.
But I love Ryan Gosling too. I think he's a great, you know, doesn't do a lot, and it comes across beautifully. Like it's like Blue Valentine's one of my favorite films too. I love that movie. Yeah.
Can you watch just last one, and then I'll go to Ben. Can you watch a movie like a regular person? Like, cause I think sometimes this is really low level, but we, Ben and I, you know, we talk movies. So we kind of have a critical eye when we watch, but you've done it. You've been in it. Can you like divorce yourself from your craft when you watch stuff, or do you always have your eye on the production, what the actor's doing, technique and all that stuff?
I try, when I watch something the first time, just to enjoy it, you know, for the art and just watch.
Yeah.
And then like, the second or third time, if I really like the movie and I want to watch it again, then I'll, you know, look at like what kind of shot that was, or, you know, what the choices that the actors chose. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, will you hear something and be like, and like say the line in a different way or something like that? I feel like I'm going to stop.
No, I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I could see how it's hard to answer for sure. I mean, like, it's like,
he's going to keep asking me these questions. So. Yeah.
I like if I'm watching it for a third or fourth time to see you know, I'll watch one actor in the scene specifically.
Yeah.
And put myself in their shoes, mm-hmm. and react and see if they're reacting to the same lines that I'm reacting to. Like if the other, when the other person's talking to the actor that I'm paying attention to as I am them, I know this is very weird. Mm-hmm. I'll see if I can pick up the beats that he's picking up.
Yeah. Because,
you know,
kind of like when you're like holding your breath, like when someone, like as us who aren't actors, like you hold your breath when someone else is holding their breath in the film. Like, are you like, is that kind of where you're getting at, or am I might?
I
don't know.
if your scene partner is saying something and there's clearly something that they say that should trigger you.
Yeah.
Like that's a beat. It's cool to know that I picked that up just as well as Al Pacino picked it up.
Yeah.
Just like I picked it up. Okay, cool. Right. So, and then that's you know, kind of analyzing, almost like analyzing a script, except you're watching it in real time and you're seeing what their choices were. And if they saw the beat that you saw.
Yeah. Like you're thinking like, okay, this is what I would, how I would act, how this you know, like say a character asks a question or it's a tense scene and then you're kind of anticipating what the other character is going to say. As an actor, you're like, oh, this is how I would play it.
Yeah.
Let's see if they
trying to recreate that moment. Too.
Yeah.
And the best acting is the acting that you can't see, really. I mean, it's just like that's the holy grail. I mean, that's, there's a great scene. It's one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and it's a short scene. It's early when he's clean shaven still, and they catch the guys who are about to rape the girl in the park.
Yeah. Yep.
And he grabs, I think it's the next day, and they're coming out to go into the bus, and he's like, I'm gonna take him across the street and get some coffee. Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So he goes across the street, and the dude's just looking out, and Pacino's just grabbing coffee, gives him a coffee, and he's talking at the same time, and it's just, he's looking right at him like there. It's just,
yeah.
It's like he doesn't look away. It's I don't know how to describe it. It's just
yeah. It's like
he wasn't like, talking. It's like Pacino was talking to the right. actor.
Yeah.
Like the subtext was like, maybe something like, you're in the big leagues, man. You're in a scene with me. Let's do this. Okay.
Yeah. Like, definitely. Yeah.
Watch me work.
He's coming off probably the biggest movie ever at that point, Godfather, you know? So it's like, like, come on, you're talking to Michael Corleone here. Come on.
And, you know, of all actors, he sheds his entire like natural persona. And like you said, Kevin, he's in there. He's, you know, he's doing the coffee. He's having his conversation. He's like completely free in the moment. He will do or say anything, whatever the movie needs him to do. And it just leaves Pacino aside and, you know, does whatever this character has to be. And that's why I think it's, like you said, you don't really notice it because, but you feel it or you get to it when you watch. Like I get when in that scene, like that, I get a feeling, which is, like I'm almost doing the same thing. I've left all the other things that are going on outside within my room. They're all gone. I'm now in this moment kind of thing. And that's what's so great about it.
Like think had they done that scene where they're in the coffee shop and it was like a close up of Pacino, you know, and then it cuts to his face, you know, to get his reaction. And then it cuts back to Pacino and you don't see them messing with the coffee or anything. It just, I don't know. It makes it. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't live as much there. Like I think the fact that you get to see the mundaneness of just him grabbing coffee and still being in the scene.
Right.
It can be hard. Like when you have to work with when you're working with props, man, it can be difficult. You have to make it natural.
Speaking of that, yeah, I mean that kind of brings me back to. when, you know, I've heard, you know, I'm sure many of us have heard the old story of the scene in The Godfather at the very beginning when Marlon Brando is, you know, talking to people at his daughter's wedding, like Francis Ford Coppola was like, something's not working. And he puts a cat on Marlon Brando's lap. Like some, like, you know, lower, you know, skilled actors might like be totally focused on that. And almost it might be a vice for them. Whereas like Marlon Brando was just able to make it work. Like it was just like, okay, you like you're not threatened by him because he has a cat, but you know what he can do. Like it's like that kind of prop type of thing, you know.
And he's in he's in total control because anyone who's had a cat on their lap knows that a cat sometimes might just want to bolt. But that cat, that cat never went anywhere. That cat was just was just as in the moment as all of us is viewing, which is like it, that is total command. I love that. It's, I'm glad you brought that up, Ben.
Yeah,
I love the scene. Back to the scene where he's pouring the wine and talking about why he became a cop.
Yeah,
like if you notice, it's obviously it's all one shot. When he pours the first drink, he's still he's talking while he's doing all this, and he pours that second drink, and it's a perfect, like, they're both.
Yeah, he's got it perfect.
They're both perfect. Beautiful. Beautiful.
It's like, you're remembering your lines, and it's not just coming off as line reading. It's coming off as just realness, and yet you're still able to multitask like this, and it's just, yeah, sometimes it's just like I'm in awe of actors, you know, just in general. Like, it's just like I don't know how.
That's like classes. I mean, he studied with Lee Strasberg.
Right. Yeah.
Who he finally, you know, the story about Lee Strasberg and The Godfather 2?
I don't think so.
Because he was the main bad. Well, he was like the bad guy. I can't remember the character's name, but he was in Florida and he was the one.
Hyman Roth.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
if you leave me the money here, I know I have a partner. If not,
that's right.
I
know
I don't.
Yes. That's Lee Strasberg. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had to beg. He was like, you got to be in this movie. And he had to beg Lee Strasberg to take that part.
And here's someone who teaches and then he actually does it. And he does it so good in that movie.
And he was nominated for an Oscar for that, Lee Strasberg.
It's great.
So great. And not to go totally off base, but have any of you watched The Offer yet?
I was going to say the cat scene. I was like, have you watched that yet? Okay.
I haven't.
Good? I haven't seen it.
Okay. Oh. So they mentioned that at some point.
Yeah. They talk about the cat scene. And but it's so funny because after they do that, after they shoot that scene, I think they're looking at the dailies. And then the studio heads are like, he was mumbling, and all we were focused on was a fucking cat.
Yeah.
Like, and they were talking about how he had to, you know, he didn't have his lines memorized. I don't know how he did what he and won. And like, he's Marlon Brando is one of the most amazing actors of all time. And there's pictures online, I think, of Robert Duvall. And he's got like his lines on him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know how you do that. And he made it natural and you don't even notice it.
Well, even I think there, you know, I've seen, you know, so many documentaries on Godfather. I think even at one point, like he put like post-it notes you know, cue cards on Luca Brasi's forehead, I think. They said, like,
I'm pretty sure they talk about that in The Offer, and they show, you know, that he puts the cotton balls in his mouth because they come to his house because they really like Coppola, like the writer of The Godfather sees Marlon Brando as the Don, and they got to find a way to get him to be in the movie. And he, you know, does the shoe polish thing, slicks his hair back, puts the cotton balls in his mouth, and they're just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That's the guy.
Who plays Marlon Brando in that?
Oh man, I can't remember his name. He was on like
Justin Chambers. It looks Justin Chambers.
Yeah, he was in
Grey's Anatomy. Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, Grey's Anatomy. He was a doctor. But you can see how he kind of looks like a young Marlon Brando.
Yeah, definitely.
So good show. Recommend?
I love it. Yeah. I think the final episode is tomorrow. So
nice. Speaking of Godfather, this is the second movie in a row where Al Pacino gets a huge old, you know, injury to his cheek. You know, in The Godfather, obviously, he gets, you know, punched in the face and has like a swollen cheek. And in this, he gets shot in the cheek. I think I want to say it's opposite cheeks, too. So that's an interesting comparison there.
Yeah, except the voice would like sound the same when he got his mouth wired shut. It's kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that scene, you know, at the end in the hospital, you know, because I mean, he doesn't, you know,
read the cards to me. Remember when he was like,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
like, did he already read the cards? Did he know what those? I'm sure he knew what those cards already said. And he was. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, read my fan mail. Yeah. Like the people crossing out like, yeah, like. Get well, basically saying go die, like the price he paid for trying to get the truth out and expose this police corruption is just, you know, again, the ultimate hero story. You're not going to do the easy thing. You know, it's easy to take the money. It's easy to just, you know,
when everyone in your life turn the other cheek, just do it, you know? Go along.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exactly. Admirable.
And yeah, what about F. Murray Abraham? For like a minute or two, and he's in that final scene where, you know, he gets shot.
Yeah, I know.
He's uncredited in the movie, apparently.
Oh, is he? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was just actually looking for him on IMDb, and I was like, I didn't want to mention it in case that wasn't really him, because that totally looks like him. But yes, it's him.
Before Scarface, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I just love that. I kind of love the way they just set Serpico
talking in the mic, Dave.
Oh, I love the way they set Serpico up to die, you know, because that's what they would have done. They wouldn't.
Yeah,
they wouldn't have done it directly. They just set the circumstance up for him. And there's a lot of tension. He's trying to fight his way through the door. He's screaming for them to help. And they're just going to stand there and wait. As soon as this gun goes off, then they go busting in. Oh, it's a big accident. You know,
how do you survive like a shot to the like? I don't know how you do that. I guess it's because the bullet was small.
That's right. It's right in his cheek.
Yeah.
So if it was a bigger bullet, because they even mention it in the movie.
Yeah.
If it was I don't know a lot about bullets, but like the caliber, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. Small
caliber or something.
Maybe it was just lodged in his cheekbone or something. I don't know.
Because it was a small hole, which meant, I guess, the bullet was small.
Yeah, they I think they said something about the bullet, like it being small shrapnel or whatever you call it. Like,
it's crazy.
And yeah, it must have just. I thought it missed his. But yeah, I mean, they basically set up the movie to make you think that a cop's going to do it. You know, you know, that's going to shoot him in the face. But even that scene, though, so much tension, like he's trying to push open the door, his hand squeezing through. I don't know. Yeah. Like I, you know, it's so realistic because, you know, I've tried to like squeeze my hand through things like to try to get like fix a car or, you know, not that I'm a car guy or anything, but, you know, just trying to do something around the house and like squeezing your hand behind something and it's like kind of scratching it. And that's like the feeling I got when he's like squeezing his hand through the door. And, you know, it's just like, why aren't you guys helping me? And then, you know, he obviously comes to the realization like, okay, yeah, I know why they're not helping me. Mm-hmm. And then, it ends up being a criminal that shoots him in the face. But that's what the cops wanted, you know, that way, you know, they're scot-free, you know, they could make up a story. And why do we think, I mean, I don't know. Just talking about a movie, a story, not talking about the real story. But why do we think the cops actually took him back and tried to save him?
Didn't they leave him on the steps? Did they not leave?
I thought so, but like in the beginning, he's obviously driving in a car. I want to watch the beginning again to see who's in the car, if it's a F. Murray Abraham or not. Because I mean, they definitely leave him. So yeah, maybe someone else comes and maybe it's his cop friends, like his very few allies he has. Maybe they show up. I don't know. Twitter, let us know. Internet, let us know what we're missing here.
I kind of thought, well, they do have as corrupt as they are, And as much as they don't want to get in trouble, they still, I think there's even underneath that and above that. Well, that makes no sense, but something also important is not leaving a man behind and their duty to a fellow officer. So mm-hmm. I kind of thought they were like, we'll leave him to die and he's dead. He's shot in the face, yeah. But they can't, it would be far worse for them if no one had gotten him. Yeah, that would be that's like the sin of the sin. That's worse than taking money.
Oh, maybe they went back to, well, I mean, this was back in the 70s, so maybe they had to go back down to the car and on the AP, what do you call it? Like it's like,
yeah,
the,
like the radio or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't have cell phones, obviously, and stuff. So they had to, they had to call somebody. They had to go back to the car. So that's probably what they did.
Yeah.
I think even that would have been, I guess my point is, it would have been even too low for any cop to let him sit there and die. And
yeah, because I mean, essentially, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it's corrupt, but you know, they're taking money. You know, that's what we do. We take money. You know,
didn't they? But they, when he got shot, didn't they go inside? And
they did right away. Yeah.
And did they like take the bad guys downstairs or something? I can't remember. That's what they did.
Went after them, at least.
They brought him out. Then I think they went back to get Serpico after they brought the bad guy or the bad guy. I don't know. The guy who shot Serpico down.
The bad guys.
Drug dealer. I guess that's what it was, right? It was a drug dealer.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he was in narcotics.
They brought the drug dealer down, then went back and got Serpico. And then, but it happened. Now I'm thinking about it. Because in the beginning, he's getting brought in at night, but the shooting happens during the day, right?
Yeah. I wonder if that was something they just couldn't avoid, maybe like shooting wise. That did seem a little weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm
looking at the Wikipedia plot. Doesn't give me details. during a drug arrest, Serpico is shot in the face when his backup fails to act. He recovers, though, with lifelong effects from his wound. So yeah,
that doesn't help us.
But I love when it, you know, I don't know if it's the commissioner or what, tries to give him the shield and he's like, I don't want it. Like, that's the last thing I want. Like, this is not what this has been about. Like, I'm being betrayed no matter what. Like, you know, shove it up your ass, essentially, is what he says, you know, because he says, like, shove it, you know, shove it, I think he says.
But then he eventually, he puts it on his chest again, and he's like, okay, fuck it. Just
like, whatever.
By the way, I actually thought this movie was setting this up for a death, even though I guess people probably heard of Serpico before, and it was a true story, so we knew he wasn't dead. But I thought the movie set this up for a tragic, heroic death. This is a man who was killed by the system. And so not knowing too much about reality, that's kind of where my mind went, movie going. So it was nice
I didn't know when I first saw this movie that it was a true story. And the first scene you see is Serpico's been shot and he's got a hole in his face. And you're like, well, that just got interesting.
Yeah. Interesting way to start.
How did this happen? I guess
definitely we'll see. Another, you know, in retrospect now, because I saw Reservoir Dogs before I saw this, it brought me back to, you know, obviously movies that take inspiration from other movies. I gotta assume at least that Quentin Tarantino maybe got inspiration from Serpico to, you know, do the flashback and, you know, we're about to go on this heist, but oh, he's shot. What happened? Like, and then they, you know, do the whole time jump. I don't know if that's, you know, where Tarantino got it, but you can't help but think that.
Hell yeah. I mean, look, I think I will say, you know, on these two, looking at Dog Day Afternoon and this movie, while I like this movie, I think Dog Day Afternoon is a way better film. But I would also say that I think Serpico was more influential, to Ben's point. I think you'll see the stuff that happened in this movie pop up in other things, the corrupt cops, or just the way things were shot, like the time jump with being shot in the car, stuff like that. Would you guys agree with that? Or
yes.
Dog Day Afternoon is better.
No,
too, right?
Yeah.
Cause I like this movie, but I don't know, just to be honest, I don't know that I would consider this a great film. I think it's a great performance, and a good story, but I don't know that I'll ever see this movie again, as much as I like it, or enjoyed watching it, rather.
The movie's good, but it's Pacino's performance that makes me watch it for like a third or fourth time, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, like him weeping in the bed, you know, in the hospital bed at the end, like, that is just like, that's the one of the best things, you know, best moments of Pacino I've seen, you know. It's just like, he's just like, I went through all this and like, for what, a medal, you know? It's just like, come on, like, I'm a good guy. Like, I just didn't take the money. I didn't want to take the money.
I just didn't do a bad thing.
Right. It's just, man, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, and he ends up moving to Switzerland, you know, like, yeah, just getting away from it all.
The perfect dog to move to Switzerland with.
That right. Was, yeah.
And they're Switzerland is neutral. So I would assume that, he's, you know, he's not going to be getting any. I read something into that about it. You know, I'm going to a neutral country where I can just live my life, you know, kind of a thing. Cause that's kind of what he was. And, you know, we didn't even talk about when he met the ballet chick and picks her up on a motorcycle. He went through this whole hippie phase. We didn't touch on it, which was fine. But I thought that was like some of the best parts of the movie. And he goes into the fingerprint lab where he is, and he's like telling the guy how he knows about ballet. It's hilarious and great. Yeah. And you actually get to understand what this character's all about. Now, he didn't really, I mean, we know that. He's just fucking around. Like, he learned ballet from his girlfriend, and he's going to he's so bored by his job, and like,
right,
he finds his outside life so much more interesting that he's just kind of willing to make a little bit of a fool of himself. And then he gets busted for because the light was off and this commander thought he was having sex with the other cop.
You're going down on him, obviously. You know, why else would the light be off? You know, the
principal from.
Back to the Future, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's a whole like part of the movie we didn't even touch on. But I love him on the bike with the chick was awesome, I thought.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and she's like, what is she like? She's holding him, and he's like, what is that, gun? Or something like
I forget what he responds. Yeah, I mean, obviously he admits that it's a gun, but yeah, I forget what he says. But yeah.
Yeah, like, they go to that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
He's like, whoa, don't hold there. Yeah, hold. And then he grabs her hand and puts it around his waist.
I love that. We just really quick running through the stuff I really did like about the things that I almost liked the most about the movie was understanding the character. And it was like that. And just, you know, side things. And when they go to the party and everyone's, it's like some crazy drug hippie party or something. I don't know, but everyone's introducing each other, and is like, his girlfriend's like, she's a writer, but she actually, like, right now she's writing insurance claims or something like that. This person's a novelist, but they, you know, work at the local dog pound. I don't know what it was, but, and then she introduces him as a cop, and he's like, took offense by it, because it's like, you're kind of not showing that same deference to me that you're showing to, because he feels like he's more than just a cop. He's got something else to share to the world than just being a cop. Plus, you know, to that group, being a police officer is like, you know, totally lame and square.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting.
He was having a lot of fun just interacting with people.
Yeah.
And not being a cop.
Like defined by what that means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, definitely one of those films that, has a good message and has a great hero in it. It's one of those, where I could see, you know, Frank Serpico going down as one of the great heroes in cinema and all, obviously in real history as well. So any final thoughts on Serpico, Kevin, that we didn't touch on?
I think so. I think we got it. Yeah.
I think we covered it.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you, Dave. Yeah, I do. I mean, and obviously Kevin agrees because he said it's his favorite movie. Dog Day Afternoon is the better movie. But yeah, I mean, this is just outstanding performance by Pacino in this. And yeah, it's just, glad it's around, glad it was made. And, go see it, folks. If you haven't, we gave away the whole movie. So there you go.
And Sunny in Philadelphia fans, if you ever saw Charlie running around in the Serpico outfit, you'll know where all that came from and how it came to be.
There you go. But yeah, no, man, I really appreciate you coming back on and talking movies. You're welcome back anytime. Yeah. Where can people find you on social media and all that jazz?
Yeah. Instagram is going to be the Kevin L. Johnson. And then Twitter is Kevin_L_Johnson.
All those underscores.
Love it. Mr. Underscore.
I know. Kevin L. Johnson. I have to look and see who Kevin L. Johnson is again because it was taken. I remember that.
Oh.
Some bastard.
You got to buy it from him. I think that's how people make their money is bully him. Selling Twitter handles and all that. But yeah, actually, real quick, since we're on, it's kind of topical. Top Gun Maverick came out. You were in a movie with Tom Cruise, American Made. Did you have scenes with him?
Yeah, my scene was with him at the. It was supposed to be like a montage when he was leaving the motels. It didn't make it into the movie, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, gotcha. But for some reason, I'm in the credits, so I.
That's good. Take it.
I got
residuals. Yeah.
And hey, yeah, you got to work with Tom Cruise, so that's cool.
Awesome. Yeah,
was it not cool? I don't know.
No, yeah, he was a nice guy. Yeah, I mean, he didn't. You know, he was also one of the producers, and
yeah,
I mean, anything with Tom Cruise when he's on set, he's pretty much the boss. Unless he's on set with Steven Spielberg or
right, yeah,
you know, something like that, it's a Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, man,
that's not a bad thing, by the way.
Yeah, not at all. You're welcome back anytime, and thanks so much for talking with us again.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys, appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, folks. Kevin L. Johnson on Serpico. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. Make sure you're following him on Instagram and Twitter and all that jazz. And us as well at BlockbusterCast on Twitter, at Blockbuster Mentality on Instagram, BlockbusterMentality.com, where we talk to all the celebrities and all that fun. We got a lot more episodes coming out. We're going to end 2022 strong. We're going to have a lot more episodes. 2022 started off a little slow, but hey, you know, we're human. We're picking it up. We're picking up the pace. But that is it for me, folks. For Dave and Kevin, I'm Ben. And as always, grab some popcorn, grab some snacks. We'll catch you guys at the movies.